Right. This conference nobody passed without showing a big picture, and this is the big picture. And what I will talk about is our home, some of those Friedman patches where we are living in, and the questions we ask ourselves are related to observations. When Dick Bond is coming to my office with this picture, which shows how greatly observers and cosmologists progress with understanding of the parameters of the universe. It's a curvature of the universe, very close to zero, cosmological constant, spectral index of fluctuations, baryonic number, and different colors correspond to different experiments in the last 10 years. He's asking, is there any features we could expect from theories, fundamental theories? And one of the trademark of fundamental theories are extra dimensions. So therefore, I will try to address the question of cosmological observables in series, in cosmological series with extra dimensions. There are two news. There is a bad news and there is a good news. And the bad news, that so far we have no models which make a distinct predictions which we can say tells us about extra dimensions. But the good news is that there are many of those models, and we have workshops for this. So let me first remind what is going on in 3+1 dimensions. We have in our home, in the Friedman domain, Friedman-Robertson-Walker big round geometry. I take it to be flat. We believe in inflation. And there is a series of cosmological fluctuations which tells us that the metric fluctuations can be divided in different types. There are scalar fluctuations, which with time had different names like adiabatical or curvature, and for simplicity we call them today scalar. They're described by two functions, and in most interesting cases they are proportional to each other, and we deal with very simple object, a Newtonian gravitational potential, which in cosmology is a random Gaussian field. It's very, very handy objects to deal with. In principle, there could be a vector perturbation in cosmology, and we need for them a special source. And we have also a tensor perturbations, and the gravitational waves correspond to the tensor perturbations. Additionally, we may have perturbations in the components which are subdominant, like a neutrino component or a CDM component, you name it. And if we have an independent inhomogeneities in this particular component, we call those either curvature or entropy perturbations. And that's it. There is no more potential candidates. And therefore, whatever we calculate from a series of extra dimensions will go to one category or another category, the bottleneck. Now, what we have from inflation. Inflation predicts omega total 1, sure. There are no vector perturbations. The reason is the vector perturbations are the vector field which support, which would support vector perturbations is like conformal field, and conformal fields, they're not produced during inflation. There are scale-free, almost scale-free Gaussian scalar fluctuations which are produced by some fields, phi. There are scale-free Gaussian gravitational potentials, waves, and I'm not talking at the moment about their amplitudes. I'm just mentioning in principle what can be. And two other predictions will be especially important for what I will talk about. Inflation also predicts that if we have a light scalar field, which is minimally coupled to gravity, then this field also will be generated, became classical after inflation, and will be with us. And this is very interesting because potentially it may go somewhere what can be observed. It also says, inflation, that Sooner or later, this stage of inflation ends, and we create all the particles in the universe in the process of preheating and further thermalization, and there is a transition between inflation and Friedman state. So it's remarkably that we are talking about those predictions dealing with only this picture. So this is a picture of the evolution, and inflation assumed a vacuum-like equation of state. And without even detailed knowledge of microscopic theory of inflation, we are able to talk about those predictions. It's amazing. So in cosmology, it's not a surprise. This is a picture of cold dark matter distribution in the simulations, which is extremely well resemble what we see in the sky. We don't know the nature of cold dark matter particles, but we are able to make this prediction. And this is why, because we are dealing with general relativity, and the only information from particles we need is the equation of state. And if we deal with the particles without pressure, then it's enough to analyze and make predictions. So a little bit similar situation we have for inflation. Now, let me concentrate on this thing, that the fluctuations of all scalar fields will emerge. Let me remind what is going on here. Let us consider four-dimensional, 3+1-dimensional inflation. Let us consider a massive scalar field chi, and this is equation for this massive scalar field chi. Because my special section is flat, it's very simple to separate variables, and play waves will correspond to different waves. And the only interesting thing here is a temporal dependence. And the temporal dependence are based on oscillator-like equation. And if we have this equation in flat space-time here, if suppose this field is in this room, we have no this term which came from the fact we are in a curved space-time, no redshifting of wavelengths, the first term and the last term, and k square. What we'll have is just simple oscillations. We renormalize them throughout, and they're not contribute anywhere. The very different solutions, however, takes place if we consider this very simple equation at the inflationary stage. So this is what is going on here. The solution of this equation as function of time pictorially looks like a red line or green line. If our field is very light, and here we have only one scale in the problem, it's the energy of inflation, Hubble parameter during inflation. So if the mass of the field is smaller than the scale of inflation, then we have a generation of a classical component of the scalar field. Initially, the scalar field is oscillating, its wavelength is increasing, and as far as it hits the size of the horizon, the fluctuations is frozen with the amplitude, which again is given by only dimension parameter in the problem. And this is the picture for a particular mod k, and if you continue counting those mods, they will contribute. And overall picture, special distribution of the field, looks like a random Gaussian field. This is space, and the random Gaussian field will have all the fluctuations, very, very big. If I draw here as a circle the causal patch, the Hubble radius, my fluctuations will have a wavelength which exceeded enormously. And this mechanism is enormously powerful. It works for any light field. And gravitational waves is an example of the field which effectively is minimally coupled. M is equal to zero. This is how gravitational waves are generated. The inflaton field, if it's light, it will be generated by the same matter. And the back reaction of the inflaton field to the metric fluctuations will generate adiabatical metric fluctuations. And the vector fields are not generated because effectively a mass for them is too big. This is why not generated. So in this respect, inflation acts as an enormous amplifier and stretcher. It takes quantum fluctuations of light fields, stretch their scales, and increase their amplitude to make a classical inhomogeneities. And this is so powerful mechanism that sometimes it is good mechanism, sometimes it's bad mechanism, but it's interesting because it gives us a handle what is going on. It controls the theory. We cannot have too many light fields. Okay, so the theory of cosmological fluctuations is the basis for the cosmological paradigm, which is drawn here. This is our observable universe. We have very small size of inflation initially, exponentially expand, and observations are here. If we go to a reciprocal universe, when we deal with the momenta instead of the wavelengths, the opening occurs towards early universe, and we put there our series with extra dimensions, and the series of extra dimensions are pictorially here. We may have different ways to make inner space small, to compactify them, putting them in the Kaluza Kwan manner or a brain world manner. But the bottom line is here, if I take my universe here, four-dimensional universe, and this is the size of inflation, I can see that in the beginning, before inflation starts, actually the sizes of inner and outer space are very comparable. And therefore, we are hoping to have a signals from extra dimensions over here. Right. The fact we have extra dimensions will come in four-dimensional effective theory in two entities. First, extra dimensions provides us with many scalars, and if some of them are light, they are a candidate to be produced by the mechanism I just described. Another thing is that in theories like string theory, the only theory, sure, the coupling constants are in fact are vacuum expectation values of the fields, moduli or dilaton. And therefore, in principle, we may expect that couplings are a function of fields. And I will talk first about what happens if we assume that those couplings depend on the light field, which can be generated, and then I will talk about the examples of generation of fluctuations and other effects related to the dimensional reduction when light fields appear. So the first, I'll talk about variation of the coupling constant due to the dependence on the moduli, which can be produced from inflation. This is the idea. Right. To tell this story, we have to revoke the models, toy models of inflation, especially end of inflation. So we have inflation here. If it's maintained by the slow rolling scalar field, say in chaotic scenario, then the scalar field is slow roll during inflation, starts to oscillate, and because inflaton must decay, we arrange it interaction with the observable sector particles, and it decays, radiation form, thermal history begins, and we have a usual Friedmann-Hott Big Bang expansion. To describe this process, we have to use some Lagrangian, some theory, when we have nothing during inflation, it's empty and boring space, no entropy except geometrical entropy. And then from the creation with others, all the particles are created, and to describe it, we have to use the Lagrangian. And everyone has his own or her own favorite Lagrangian. This is my Lagrangian. And of course, I'm not going to go through and... No. It was checked by supergravitation. So, to make a long story short, let us consider a very simple situation. Let us consider that inflaton interacts with fermion through a Kalman coupling like that, and we will follow what happens if the coupling constant alpha here, as a function of moduli, will be specially varying because those moduli are inhomogeneous. This is called a modulated cosmological fluctuations, very suggested last March by me and Dwalin collaborators. And the story goes like follows. The rate of decay of inflaton, this is, by the way, incorrect picture. Correct picture is a preheating. I will touch it in a while. So, but this is very good for illustration. I'm considering a perturbative decay, just for the sake of illustration. So if you have a rate of decay of scalar field into fermions, we can write down it through the coupling constant. We can express a reheat temperature after particles created and thermalized through the rate of decay, and we can express the density of radiation to be formed through this rate of decay. Now, suppose the coupling constant is a VEF of some moduli. If moduli are inhomogeneous, as I described, then we will have variation in alpha, variation in gamma, variation in heat temperature, variation in density of particles, and as a result, we get adiabatical fluctuations of matter and geometry only from modulation of field chi, which is not dynamically important at all. This field only plays the role of modulation, just change the coupling parameter. In terms of wavelengths of fluctuations, we have the following picture. This is time, those are the scale, this is end of inflation, this is the horizon during inflation and when Friedman expansion begins. And initially, by blue line, I denote the evolution of fluctuations in the moduli field, which I denote as a chi. So it's initially moduli field is light and sitting somewhere on its potential. It's actually not so unnatural to assume it's light. We are dealing with the energy scale as big as 10 to 13 GeV, and the effective mass of moduli easily can be less than 10 to 13 GeV. Now, when inflaton field, which dominates here, at this moment we don't have metric fluctuations at all, the inflaton field will decay and create radiation. And radiation is denoted by red curves. The fluctuation in radiation are induced by this modulation. And a little bit later, we assume that moduli field will pin down to its minima, make their job, and disappear. So in this picture, for simplicity, we don't have any alpha variation, coupling constant variation in present universe. They were inhomogeneous in the very early universe during sometime after inflation. They did their job, they inherit fluctuations into coupling constant and density fluctuations. And because matter, which was created, takes over the expansion, it transfers its inhomogeneities into the metric fluctuations. This is the idea. One can work it out at the technical level. It's a little bit heavy view graph, but I briefly will say what it is. It's just fun to do analytical calculations. So we can consider oscillating inflaton as a component without pressure, as a matter component. We know that inflaton oscillating nearby minimum is well described by matter equation of state. Pressure is close to zero. When inflaton decays, the products will be radiation, and they will be described the radiation equation of state. And if we say that our matter component has amplitude, which is exponentially decreasing because it's decaying, like e to the minus gamma t, gamma is the rate of decay, and contrary, radiation component is accumulating because of that decay, we can plug it in into the equation for perturbations. The only difference now, the equation for perturbations, including metric perturbations. As I said, initially there is no metric perturbations. And if we use the set of the linearized Einstein equations, the solution will get looks like that. This is time. This is the amplitude of metric perturbations. And initially, there is no metric perturbations assumed. But by the time of the decay tau here, the metric perturbations are generated, and their amplitude is proportional to the coefficient, up to the coefficient, to the variation in the coupling constant. Right, so this mechanism works. In other words, if we have change in equation of state, then we have generation of metric perturbations if this change is modulated with some parameter. As I said, the story of transition from radiation to matter is more elaborated. The perturbative mechanism doesn't work. Typically, we have what we call preheating after inflation. It's dynamically evolved stage. And here I will illustrate what is going on with an example of the hybrid inflation, because it's also a pretty interesting story by itself. Right. So let me illustrate how we understand transition from inflation to Friedman hot Big Bang using examples of hybrid inflation. In the hybrid inflation, we have two fields, phi and sigma, and we're moving along of the minimum, having inflation over here. Then waterfall occurs, we are going to the minimum, oscillate, and we're supposed to create all the particles and have Friedman expansion. And the plane of phi and sigma, we have trajectory given by the red curve, and potential, which is usually used, has a well-known form with two couplings, lambda and g squared. My message is that preheating in this theory, in other words, generation of quantum fields, goes very, very, very quickly, and we get out of equilibrium population of excitation of all the fields which are in that Lagrangian I was showing to you. So we called it tachyonic preheating. It's also valid for the dynamical symmetry breaking. Those are telephone numbers when we can read about it. And what I'm talking about, I will illustrate with a short movie view on transparency. So this is a model. We have the potential. We're moving like that, and then towards the minimum. And there is nice, simple toy model when the motion goes along the straight line, and the profile of the potential along this line looks like that. So we end inflation somewhere here, going to the minimum, and we expected previously that we will oscillate. But in reality, what happens? We don't oscillate, and in reality, what happens? This is the result of simulations we did with Gary Felder, Andre Linde, and other collaborators. So this is distribution of the field. All the fields behave equally here. So one of the field, sigma, its amplitude over here, and this is space, two-dimensional slice of the simulation is shown. So initially, our field have fluctuations, random Gaussian field, which mimic quantum fluctuations, and then field starts to move towards the minimum. What we see here, the high peaks of this Gaussian field are non-linearly increasing because we have non-trivial self-interaction around the top of the potential. And those peaks are increasing. It means that field goes down to the minimum in particular places much faster than in the places in between. And as the field continued to move towards the minimum within a single oscillation, those bubbles are expanding and begin to collapse long before the rest of the space with the field reach the minimum. And when we reach the minimum, the field is already in this state, which is, in a sense, thermalization in this component. So the message is that the transition from inflation to the state of thermalization occurs in hybrid inflations very quickly. And the similar takes place for chaotic inflationary models through the different mechanisms of parametric resonance. It's very convenient to know this because it allows us to calculate things much more effectively. Again, going to the hybrid inflation here. So in hybrid inflation, we have trajectory along of the a flat direction when inflation takes place, end of inflation, and here is the trajectory where the preheating, which I described, is taking place. Now, this point where bifurcation occurs depends on the coupling constants. Let's make coupling constants now a function of the moduli. It means that we have special variation of the parameter FC, the critical point. The critical point will have slightly different values in different Hubble patches. And as a result, we have almost instantaneous transition from inflation to radiation, but the hypersurface which divides them is rippled. And the simple way to deal with this is to have the following image. This is a space, this is time, and before we have equation of state of certain type, inflationary equation of state in the case of hybrid inflation, we have radiation which is created in the process of preheating. It's another type of equation of state. And there is a hypersurface sigma which divides them. And the process of preheating is so quick. In other words, the width of this layer is so small relatively to the scales of consideration. We are talking about the scales of fluctuations, 10 to the 26, 10 to the 28. So it's almost instantaneous. And we can use elegant theory of propagation of cosmological fluctuation through the hypersurface, which divides two different equations of state. It's a different type of fluctuations in a sense. They will be adiabatical fluctuations over here. The non-adiabatical fluctuations over here, they're all induced. There is elegant theory developed by Dirail and Slavov-Mukhanov back in 95. We can entirely use it. And we will get a generation of metric fluctuations from this fact. And the answers which are obtained this way or in the way I was showing before perturbatively, they of course are in agreement. Now, what are the features of modulated fluctuations? In principle, our metric fluctuations may have different pieces. We may deal with the textbook piece, which is generation of fluctuations from inflation. If inflaton is light, we may have fluctuations which are modulated, which came from the interaction, the decay of the inflaton. And the fact that we have more possibilities is good. If someone will tell me that there is no good conditions, no slow roll conditions, the inflaton is not so light, I will not be destroyed because we have in our pocket another possibility. So it's it allows us, it expands the space of possibilities for inflationary model buildings. Other things are, we know for a single fluid inflation there is a so-called consistency relation between amplitude of the gravitational waves and the scalar fluctuations, T to S ratio, and they are related in a certain way to the spectral index of the scalar fluctuations. For the modulated cosmological fluctuations, it's not the case. It's not necessarily so. The parameters are decoupled. We may have either curvature fluctuations in individual components.
Should that be a tensor spectral index?
Is it T? Right, T. Right. So anyway, there are. So Guy also was stressing that the story of non-Gaussianity is slightly different. Different because of the dependence of the density fluctuation from the Gaussian field goes with some powers and it gives a slightly different coefficients. Anyway, this is the first part of my presentation. The second part will be about a light fields which we have from the reductions. And I will talk about brain worlds just because it's a toy simple model which we did from the beginning to the end, but I will claim that results may be more interesting. Right, so I'll consider five-dimensional brain world model when we have two orbit fold brains, we have warp geometry, we have scalar field in the bulk, we have the situation stabilized by two potential in the brain. So the five-dimensional geometry looks like that. It's very well-known setting. We have our theory, the action, which includes bulk terms as well as the junction conditions, and we have a bulk equation for the scalar field. And what we would like to analyze there, what are specific in fluctuations? The fluctuations from inflation and extra dimensions have the following specifics. First of all, we have to say ourselves, do we have inflation in inner space, or do we have inflation both in the bulk? Do we have inflation only on the four-dimensional slice, or we have inflation in the bulk? I will consider a situation when we have inflation on four-dimensional slice only. And one of the reasons is my calculations of gravitational waves production from inflation in the bulk shows that the amplitude is too big. And therefore, I don't want to consider this. So in other words, they rule out. But it's not a strong statement. Again, I did it for some models. Right, we have to consider fluctuations of scalars, fluctuations of gravitational waves. We have to take into account that there are many components of gravitational waves, and they will appear in four-dimensional world as a vector, tensor, and scalars, etc. And the story for gravitational waves, unfortunately, is negative. So when we consider a tensor fluctuations in this setting, this is my geometry, it's a Diffeomorphic geometry in four dimensions, a warp geometry in the bulk, I consider gravitational waves. And what we do, we take those components, we use some nice gauge to have most economic collection of components. We split modes into y-dependent components, extra-dimension-dependent component, and four-dimensional tensorial modes. The four-dimensional tensorial modes are over here, and we have to solve eigenvalue problem for the wave function of gravitons in y dimensions. Now, unfortunately, the answer is pretty boring, and there is, in effect, no go results. We found that for generic settings, this is nice. For an arbitrary potentials in the bulk, arbitrary potentials in the brain, as far as they are self-consistent through the Einstein equations, there is a gap of gravitons. The massive gravitons are too heavy. So if gravitons are heavier than the Hubble parameter, as you remember, those particles with mass bigger than the Hubble not generated. And the only modes which we have is a massless mode, which corresponds to two components of gravitons in four-dimensional case. The only interesting result probably here is that it turns out the amplitude of those gravitons will depend on the Hubble parameter divided by the mass, Planckian mass, but not Planckian mass today, at Planckian mass then, at the end of inflation. And because we have a bent brain, our Planckian mass, which is reduction of the fundamental mass and the volume of extra dimension, it may be different from the Planckian mass today. Therefore, conclusion is that not necessarily gravitational waves are measuring directly the energy of inflation, because there is this extra dependence of Planckian mass from the fact that we're dealing with the Diffeomorphic brain.
This also shows that if the Planck mass changes during inflation, you don't get the Planck spectrum.
That's correct. Yeah, sure. Now, let's turn to the scalar fluctuations. And this is work in previous work on the gravitational waves I did with Andrei Frolov. And again, we have the same setting. We have brain world. Let's try to make it as generic as possible. The scalar field inside, potential to stabilize the brains. We may have many, many components, but we will concentrate only on one component, namely, we will concentrate on fluctuations of the background scalar field. Let us recall what is going on in 3 plus 1 dimensions. This is the story of generation of fluctuations from 3 plus 1 dimensional geometry. The perturbed Friedman-Robertson-Walker geometry has the scalar metric perturbations. If for pedagogical purposes I keep the three-dimensional slice curved, it may have curvature k 0 plus minus 2. How we solve it? We are looking for the solution again by separating eigenmodes of this three-dimensional space which satisfy its equation. And the equation for time-dependent component are well known, and they link together fluctuations of the scalar field and potential. And just pay attention that the eigenmode here is entering in the combination with the curvature. We can repeat the same exercise for scalar perturbations in 4 plus 1 dimensional warp geometry. So if we have outer space to be de Sitter, and this is a warp geometry, we can show that again, more generic gauge is such a, we have two scalar fluctuations, we have linearized Einstein equations, from them we have connection between psi and f, and numerical coefficient is different from 3 plus 1 dimensional case. We split again, as usually, the wave function of fluctuations into y-dependent and four-dimensional dependent functions. The four-dimensional dependent functions describe a massive scalar excitations, and we have equations for fluctuations which we must to solve. Very much similar to what we have in four-dimensional case. So only difference is numerics instead of two, there is 3/2. But most important part will be here. So here we have eigenvalues plus 3k, here we have eigenvalues m squared plus 4h squared. Now, when we solve those equations, so we reduce those equations to a single second-order Schrödinger-type equation for fluctuations, which describe dynamical mode. And contrary to cosmology, here we're dealing with the eigenvalue problem, because additionally we have a boundary condition of the brain. And using tricks of the eigenvalue problem mathematics, we can estimate, we can find the spectrum of Kaluza-Klein modes here. And the lower eigenvalue has this form. So surprisingly, it begins with a negative term which came from the curvature of four-dimensional slice. So the radian mass here is minus 4h squared plus m naught squared, where m naught squared is the mass given by the model, right? If there is no curvature, we go back to the usual mass of the radian, which is well known. So what it means that we have a situation when the radian mass, of course there are other excitations, and in general I have to add index n, which shows that I have the tower of excitations in this theory. But let's concentrate on the lowest one. So if we have this mass negative, and we it's possible to have because we have relatively big negative term, then for the negative eigenmode, we have go back to the four-dimensional slice and to see what the scalar massive modes are doing during de Sitter if their mass is negative. And if its mass is negative, of course we have tachyonic instability. So this guy is increasing with time. And I'm now making a conjecture that if we consider self-consistent situation when we have a scalar field in the bulk, we have some compactification, and we considering how the system react to the vibration, gravitational vibration, then there is a scalar at the brain. It's more general conjecture, not necessarily brains. There is a scalar which mass may be tachyonic. And my logic goes like following. It's a generalization of what I was just showing for the brain. This is now not necessarily for brains. So imagine I have four-dimensional de Sitter space, and imagine I have warp geometry with the inner space being some symmetric space-time. And it's like that. I have some content here, like a scalar field. This is the only case analyzed. It will be interesting to repeat it for the form fields. And we consider now how this system reacts to the small fluctuations. And the small fluctuations means that we have to install here a metric fluctuations. We have to linearize Einstein equations, taking into account the content in the bulk. And the Einstein equations always will have a contribution from the four-dimensional slice, which goes in the combination, which after separation of variables, give me eigenmode in combination with the curvature. And In other words, my Kaluza-Klein modes for those excitations will be starting with the term which pretty much may be a negative. And this is very different from what I will get if I have a test scalar field and do a dimensional reduction. The test scalar field without self-interaction with gravity will not give me this negative contribution. Right, and the last view graph will be about what it may mean for us. The fact that if I consider this setting when I have self-consistent gravity in the bulk, my Kaluza-Klein modes may have a tachyonic component. The first, this is implementation of this story, the first, the implementation is the fact that those modes have a negative contribution. The inflation in those models are not possible, not stable, if the Hubble parameter is less than the M0, the lowest mass which is calculated in the models. If the mass is smaller than the Hubble parameter square, which is easy to achieve because I have a big negative term, then the field Q will be light field, and it will be generated by these powerful mechanisms, and we will have inhomogeneities of the metric. It's inhomogeneities of the induced metric of the fluctuations. And if you think about it, you will realize that this eventually goes back to the modulated cosmological fluctuations. It's one of the form of modulated cosmological fluctuations. But it's also fun to think about a cosmological constant problem. Because imagine I have my M naught in the bulk to be very, 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 very small. And my brains will not be stabilized, will not be stable if Hubble parameter, if the curvature is too big. They will be stabilized only if the curvature is large. And that's fine. If I do so, my cosmological constant is enormously small. It will work only if M naught is very, very small, which is not a good sign, right? We don't have very light scalar. However, imagine that this field interacts with the standard matter particles in the usual matter through the trace. And due to the interaction, there is renormalization of mass at the brain. Then this effectively means that my potential is change at the brain. The vibrations in the bulk for the system have very small eigenmode. The system is unstable if brains are too curved. But for four-dimensional observer, it appears as a massive particles. It's a very speculative possibility, but I like about it mostly because it's about a classical cosmological constant problem. And one of the things I'm learning at this conference, there is a very, very nice abbreviation for this fact. The classical cosmological constant problem with me.
Lev, you assumed an ordinary Yukawa coupling between the inflaton and the fermions it was decaying into. Typically, in many inflation models, the inflatons interact through dimension 5 or higher operators. Does that change your it's
no.
The same thing happens. Yes. It doesn't matter what.
It doesn't matter.
So a comment about this instability. All known compactification mechanisms become ineffective as you make the extra dimensions too big because you're diluting whatever you put in that was causing that. So you'll always have a degeneracy of the compactified system with the decompactified one. Now, if I put in energy density that's making the brains expand exponentially, they will also want to make the bulk expand. And eventually, if that energy density is big enough, it will overcome the bump that was preventing me from getting to the decompactified phase. So all you're seeing there is that you've been climbing up on the bump, and you've, when you get to the top, that's your tachyonic instability.
I'm afraid
I don't think
not
it's surprising.
Your language, because you have language of four-dimensional effective theory at the brain, and the purpose of this calculation was exactly to see what is going on in the five-dimensional picture, not appealing to the four-dimensional effective theory, because there may be some flaws, and as we see, there are. So, in other words, I think I'm not buying argument of four-dimensional effective theory.
We have time for one more question. Regarding the system of two desiccated brains, we had been studying that with Defaye and Langlois some time ago, and we had somewhat concluded differently. We had concluded that, you know, either the two brains are falling into one another, or that one brain is freezing towards the horizon of the first brain. And so that you just, you know, that the motion gets slower and slower as it gets to the horizon of the first brain.
Thank you for your question, because I, in my talk, didn't discuss at all, I didn't conclude at all about what happens with this instability. I've considered only linear analysis around the work configuration. We wrote a code at CETA to analyze the brain nonlinear dynamics, which allows us to follow, to use GR to solve general equation with the brain setting completely. And what we see here is the following. If we start with a two-curved brain, we see this instability numerically. And this is the time, and the mass of the radion is shown by green curve. And initially, mass of the radion is negative, right? This state right here is unstable, two-curved. And the evolution of parameters shown here, we see it as the mass of the radion is changing because of the restructuring of the brain. Sometimes system can have another warped configuration for which radion mass is positive. And here, this is zero, radion mass goes to the positive territory, and this configuration is stable. And the whole process looks like a transition. If I have two curved brain, then they're trying to, the kinetic instability is developing, they're trying to flatten. And as they flatten, another interesting thing occurs. This is a calculation of the Weyl tensor, the blue curve. And you see, during this transition, there is pretty dramatic reconstructing with the, a lot of emission of gravitons, in a sense. So what I'm saying is, if you have other stable configurations, this is likely this is what occurs. If you don't have other solutions, then you have collisions. It's great. I don't disagreement with the conclusion.
Very good. Well, let's thank Lev Kaufman again for a very nice talk. And we'll reconvene at 10 minutes past 11 for the last talk of the morning.